We have reached the last day of Rohatsu Sesshin, the day we celebrate the Buddha's awakening. So it's time to hear the story of Buddha's awakening. The annual rendition of the story, and since we're celebrating Keizan Zenji this Sesshin, we'll let Keizan tell the story in the transmission of light record. Keizan says it like this. Shakyamuni Buddha was of the sun race in India. At the age of 19, he leapt over the palace walls in the dead of night, and at Mount Dantaloka, he cut off his hair. Subsequently, he practiced austerities for 6 years. And later, he sat on the Vajra seat, where spiders spun webs in his eyebrows. And magpies built a nest on top of his head. Reeds grew up between his legs as he sat tranquilly and upright without movement for 6 years. Yeah.
Is this when he was doing austerity?
This is the austerities time. It says 6 years. And the sutras usually say he left home at 29 and practiced for 6 years. And at 35, he, on the verge of starvation, he received some sweet porridge, nourishing this phantom body, and built up some strength, and his hardcore ascetic friends thought he was indulgent, so they wandered off to Varanasi, where he'd later catch up with them. And then, with a satisfied belly, Buddha gathered some kusha grass and laid it down under the shade of the Bodhi tree and crossed his legs and sat upright with the resolve that enough of this struggle. Let's resolve this matter once and for all. I will not arise from this seat until I have resolved the great matter. At the age of, it says 30, I usually say 35. On the 8th day of the 12th month, in Japanese called Rohatsu, as the morning star appeared, he was suddenly awakened. And his first lion's roar came forth in these words, I and all beings on earth, the great earth and all beings, simultaneously realize the way. And Keizan says, from that time on, for 49 more years, he did not spend a day alone but taught the Dharma for the assembly constantly, with one robe and one bowl. He was complete. He lacked nothing. During that time, he taught to the assembly more than 360 times, probably more like thousands. Later, he transmitted the treasury of the true Dharma eye to Mahakashyapa, and it's been passed down from Mahakashyapa through the generation after generation to the present. Truly, it's been transmitted through India, China, Japan, and America. Where the practice of the true Dharma is based on it, Shakyamuni Buddha's awakening. The practices of his lifetime are the standard for his descendants. Even though he possessed the 32 marks and 80 minor marks of a Buddha, he certainly looked like an ordinary old monk and was no different from other people. Therefore, after his appearance in the world, through all this time up to now, those who emulate his teaching and conduct model themselves on the Buddha's deportment. They use what he used, and each moment while walking about, standing, sitting, or lying down, they do as the Buddha did. So we celebrate this Sesshin. Buddha after Buddha and ancestor after ancestor have simply transmitted this so that the true Dharma is not cut off. So the Buddha said, I and the great earth and all beings simultaneously attain the way. And Kazon says, the so-called I in this story is not Shakyamuni Buddha. And Shakyamuni Buddha comes from this I. Not only does Shakyamuni come from it, but the great earth and all beings also come from it. Just like when a large net is taken up from the water, all the many openings of the net are also taken up. When the jewel net of Indra is taken up, every jewel is taken up. So when Shakyamuni Buddha was awakened, the great earth and all beings were also awakened. The whole net taken up. Not just the great earth and beings, but all Buddhas of the past, present, and future also awakened. Since this is so, don't think it was just Shakyamuni Buddha who was awakened. There's no Shakyamuni Buddha apart from the great earth and all beings. Even though mountains, rivers, and myriad forms flourish in great abundance, none of them are left out of Gotama's eyeball. All of you here are also established in Gotama's eyeball. Not only are you established in it, but this eyeball has become you. This eyeball becomes the flesh and blood body. It becomes the whole body of each person standing like an 80,000 foot precipice in each one of us. You are Gotama's eyeball. Gotama is the entirety of each of you. this eyeball, if we look closely at it, with it, it dissolves into a great ocean, an eternal, all-pervading ocean called here and now, from which we're all born, into which we all die, to which all the Buddhas awaken. If we look away from the ocean, it becomes an eyeball of Gotama. Yes?
That look reminds me of the dream mirror of samadhi, of using our eye to see the mirror, and it, you are not it, it actually is you, using your eye to see.
You are not it. In truth, it is you.
Both the seeing and what we think we're seeing, but we're really what we're seeing.
The eyeball is you, the ocean is you, yeah. Here is you, now is you. Shakyamuni Buddha shares this with each of us intimately, with no separation in time or space. And this is was Buddha's awakening. So, therefore, it is what we all most intimately share. The ocean of here and now. The eyeball of all the Buddhas. So, since we all intimately share it, that's what the Buddha saw. And therefore, no one could be left out of this awakening. It was not like some just personal insight. And the Buddha's freedom must include the freedom of everyone. If it's what we all intimately share, this ocean, then if there's anyone discontent that shares this ocean, then that discontent is our own. So thus, awakening to this heart of great intimacy, love, and compassion, the Buddha could not remain on the mountaintop, and he, with great, great courage and love, he took a step forward down the mountain for us, with us. And so the image we present offerings to in this ceremony, it's on the altar now, is Shakyamuni Buddha descending the mountain. In Japanese Soto temples, this is the image for Rohatsu Sesshin, and the image for Buddha's awakening is not the Buddha standing atop the mountain radiating multicolored light beams in all directions, but this ordinary-looking monk descending the mountain in a very ordinary way back into the world of suffering to share the ocean of here and now with all beings. He never stopped being one of us. Or each of us never stopped becoming him. As we are. And the main way we are what he is that which we share most intimately. The eternal ocean of now, the all-pervading ocean of here. So Shakyamuni Buddha's sitting under the Bodhi tree, therefore, is happening right here, the all-pervading here, right? Not a particular location, but when he was sitting there and touched the earth and saw the star, how could that not be right here? When he touched the earth and saw the star, how could that not be right now? Not 10:17 on a Wednesday morning, but the eternal now, right? The timeless now. This is the time when Shakyamuni Buddha awakened, and this is the place. I mean, literally, isn't it? Not Santa Cruz on Wednesday morning. That's not the eternal, all-pervading here and now. That's just a particular manifestation of the ocean. But the ocean of here and now is the same ocean where Buddha looked up and saw, we say the morning star, but the Japanese here says the bright star is the way they put it. This is the planet Venus, probably. But the bright star, and that bright is this this word myo we've been talking about, that can mean clarify, like, or illuminate. Clarify the ground, Keizan says, and illuminate the ground, and also means bright. So we could, and Dogen likes to do this kind of thing, right, is read a Chinese sentence in a fresh way, which is legitimately readable this way. So we could say, Buddha looked up and clarified the star, or he looked up and saw and illuminated the star. Instead of he saw the bright star, he saw and illuminated the star. We could read it this way. Such an essay should be written. So that's today's story. And yes.
One last thing this morning, at about 8 o'clock or 8:15, if you can probably see it tomorrow, that star is right next to the waxing moon. Right by side.
The is it Venus?
Yes, this morning.
Mm-hmm. The bright star.
Yes.
So we can illuminate it, mm-hmm. and it can illuminate us.
So you can see it.
And if we see that tomorrow, mm-hmm. at the time we see it, it will be now. Sometimes people like to hear stories. Sometimes people tell me that, and I feel like it's my karmic disposition is I'm not really like such a storyteller. I like just like, here's the practice, you know, kind of thing. Let's just get down to it. Stories I like stories. They're entertaining, but sometimes I feel like, I don't want to entertain people. We don't have time for that. But I can't ever think of any stories to tell. And I was having that thought while I was sitting. Like, maybe there's, you know, a story I could come up with. And like, no, I can't think of any.
You tell jokes.
right after I had that thought, I thought, oh, I just thought of one. I don't know why this particular story just arose in my mind. I think it was also when considering Keizan's point in a previous day, like yesterday, which also known as now, Keizan was saying, teaching is found in Zen, but it's not the usual teaching. Rather, it's this direct pointing, the simple transmission of the way, just expressing directly, speaking with the whole body. These words are without sentences or phrases. So somehow that was circulating around, and then this story arose. About teaching in Zen, and how it comes in strange forms sometimes. And this was the first sesshin I ever sat at Green Dragon Temple in 1990. A practice period led by Tenshin Roshi and ending with Rohatsu Sesshin and a Shuso ceremony. And the Shuso for this practice period was Reverend Myo Lehi, who is currently the abbot at Hartford Street Zen Center. And this memory is of his Shuso ceremony at Green Gulch. And everyone, as we'll do today, similar to today, we have this question and answer ceremony. Here we call Shosan. We have the Shuso, the head student for the practice period, has a similar ceremony. They answer questions from the assembly. And usually everybody in the assembly asks a question, kind of leading up to the most senior member of the assembly. And then that's the end. And maybe the teacher, their guiding teacher, makes some statement. The teacher usually doesn't ask a question in the ceremony. Occasionally I have seen them do so, but the tradition is that the teacher is more just witnessing the ceremony. And it's a little bit, I think, maybe it would be seen as a little bit too intimidating, actually, if the teacher asked the question in the ceremony like that. But in this one, after everyone was finished, and a statement is sometimes made, just about to go on to the next thing, Tenshin Roshi, the teacher, asked a question. I think it was unexpected. He was like, huh? And he asked Shuso Myo, what is Buddha? In a very grave and serious manner. What is Buddha? And Myo, without missing a beat, said, last night, after night sitting, I left the Zendo and was walking back to my cabin, and the frogs were singing and the stars were shining. And Tenshin Roshi said again, what is Buddha? And Myo, without hesitating, said, and then as I walked along the path, I got to my cabin and I looked across the valley and I saw your house, teacher, with the light still on. And Tenshin Roshi said, what is Buddha? And Myo, without hesitation, said, "And when I saw your light on in your house, my heart just smiled." And Tenzin Roshi bowed in great appreciation and approval. Something like that. So, it's a story. And about the kind of the main issue here is, what is Buddha? What are we making all these offerings to? What are we celebrating this week? As Keizan says, teaching is found in Zen, but it's not the usual teaching. What is Buddha? Keizan continues in the Zazen Yojinki, the guidelines for Zazen that we've been studying this week. Zazen is not based on discipline, concentration, or wisdom. So this is another kind of three-part list, kind of classic presentation of Dharma. Sila, Samadhi, and Prajna. The Buddha, Shakyamuni, over and over again in the sutras would teach this model of his all-encompassing Dharma. Sila, Samadhi, and Prajna is a complete path. It is the Eightfold Path abbreviated. All eight folds of the Eightfold Path fit into Sila, Samadhi, and Prajna. Sila, we translate often as discipline or ethical discipline or morality or virtue and or precepts. In Japanese, it's kai, is sila, and that's, we translate often as precepts, right? Receiving the precepts is jukai. Really, it's receiving sila, receiving virtue. And samadhi, or concentration, samadhi is one-pointedness of mind and object, meditative, focus. I like to these days loosely translate samadhi as presence. It's not really literal. Really literally, it's like one-pointedness. But I think presence captures the feeling of this word samadhi. Presence. Or unity, even. And then wisdom or prajna, wisdom or understanding or knowing. Sila, samadhi, and prajna, virtue, presence, and wisdom. Virtue, presence, and understanding, we could translate. Or discipline, concentration, and wisdom. So, Keizan's expressing Zazen in this way. And people might often connect Zazen, if they heard that list, they say, it sounds like Samadhi, because sometimes we call it the self-enjoyment Samadhi. But Keizan says, Zazen is not based on virtue, presence, and understanding. These three are all contained within Zazen. Virtue, Sila, is usually understood as avoiding all evil and doing all good, ceasing wrong, and so on. Zazen contemplates non-duality of the whole essence. Or another translation. In Zazen, the whole thing is known to be non-dual. Cast off numberless concerns and rest free from entangling yourself in the Buddha Dharma or the worldly Dharma. Leave behind feelings about the way as well as usual sentiments. When you leave behind all opposites, what can obstruct you? This is the formless virtue of the mind ground, or the signless discipline of the mind ground. So this is Shila, or virtue, or ethical discipline from the perspective of Zazen. It's leaving behind all opposites. And we might say, that sounds like it would actually undermine virtue, because we might say, then good and bad fall away, and so precepts, no precepts, all the same. So that would be a misunderstanding, I would say. This is more like all opposites of self and other drop away. That's the big one. That if the sense of me and you as separate drop away, then all the ethical precepts are perfectly and naturally and effortlessly fulfilled. The only reason we harm others and don't do good is because we reify the illusion of duality and separation between me and you. As Keizan says, In Zazen, the whole thing is realized as non-dual. So that's Shiva. Samadhi, or presence, usually means unbroken concentration. But Zazen is dropping off body and mind, leaving behind delusion and awakening. Unshakable, unchanging, without activity. It's not deluded, but still, like a fool, like an idiot, like a mountain, like the ocean, without any duality of motion or stillness. This samadhi is no samadhi, because it has no sign of samadhi, and so it is called great samadhi. Wisdom, prajna, understanding, is usually understood to be clear discernment and understanding. In Zazen, all that is known vanishes of itself. Mind and consciousness are forgotten forever. Throughout the body is wisdom eyes.
That's the thousand years. Yeah, right.
Very nice. Yeah, I was wondering if anyone would recognize that. We say from the Zen story where... How does the Bodhisattva of great compassion use all those hands and eyes? And the response is, all over the body is, all over the body is hands and eyes. Well, how is that? It's like reaching back for a pillow at night. And something like this. And, great compassion is like reaching back for a pillow at night. How do you understand this? Like all over the body is hands and eyes. And the other says, I wouldn't say it quite like that. I'd say it throughout the body is hands and eyes. Pervading the body is hands and eyes. And don't know if anyone's ever seen the t-shirt. I think it's a UC Santa Cruz t-shirt with a banana slug, which is the school mascot, right? And the banana slug on this t-shirt is like curled up with its hands like this, sitting zazen. Anyone seen that t-shirt? It's a cool shirt. Huh? Done in the same, that's cartoon style very nicely. It's like a banana slug sitting zazen. Two big eyes. Is that how slugs' eyes? They stick out. Yeah, on his eye stalks, and with a big smile, this slug, and it says in Chinese characters, it says throughout the body eyes. And when I've seen that shirt, I wondered who designed that shirt. You know, somebody knew this Zen story. And since it's in Chinese, no one can read it. It just looks like some Zen thing.
What does the second translation do?
Throughout the body, eyes.
That's fine.
Or tsu shin gen, in the Japanese pronunciation. Oh, all over the body.
Yeah.
Throughout the body, eyes. Yeah, eyes everywhere. Yeah. Eyes everywhere.
Perceive not.
What's that?
Perceive not with the eyes and ears, but with the entire body. The third character actually means eyes popping out all over the body.
Popping out all over. Or we could say all those eyes, when we look closer, we see they're just one eyeball called Shakyamuni Buddha's eyeball that has become each of us. So this is talking about prajna from the point of view of zazen. It is... This translation actually says, the wisdom eye of this body has no discrimination. But if you look at the Chinese, it's that same phrase from that koan. Throughout the body is wisdom eyes. They put wisdom in there. And there is nothing to be discerned. This is clear seeing of Buddha nature. From the beginning, it's free from delusion. It cuts off the root of conceptual thinking and opens, and clear luminosity pervades everywhere. This wisdom is no wisdom because it has no sign of wisdom. Therefore, it's called great wisdom. So the teaching that the Buddhas have presented all throughout their lifetimes are just this, sila, samadhi, and prajna. In zazen, there's no virtue that's not maintained, no presence that is unpracticed, no wisdom that is unrealized. Conquering the demons of confusion, conquering Mara, attaining the way, turning the wheel of Dharma, and returning to Nirvana, all arise from the power of this. Miraculous powers and wondrous functions, emanating luminosity and proclaiming the Dharma, all of these are present in this zazen. Then, Keizan goes on to quote, almost verbatim, an entire fascicle of Dogen's called Shobogenzo Zazengi, which is very similar to Fukan Zazengi. Fukan Zazengi is an independent essay that we chanted earlier this session. It's Dogen wrote. It's like the first thing Dogen wrote, and then he kept revising it and editing it over the course of his life. And then he also wrote a Shobo Genzo essay called Zazengi that's almost the same, but it's a little shorter, and it's a little less flowery. And it's like a page long in English, half a page or something, pretty short. Zazen instructions about the posture and so on. And Keizan just kind of excerpts the entire fascicle and inserts it at this point as kind of like as he's getting near the end. So maybe just quickly for the sake of the hearing the words, I'll just kind of read through. Practicing Zen is Zazen, or San Zen is Zazen. To practice sitting, find a quiet place and lay down a thick mat. Don't let wind, mist, rain, or smoke, or dew come in. Keep a clear space with enough room for your knees. Although in ancient times there were those who sat on diamond seats or on large stones, they all used cushions. The place where you sit should not be too bright in the daytime or too dark at night. It should be warm in the winter and cool in the summer. That's the method. Abandon mind, intellect, and consciousness. Leave aside memory, thinking, and contemplating. Don't try to make a Buddha. Don't be concerned with right or wrong, or how well or how poorly you think you're doing. Just understand that time is as precious as if you were putting out a fire in your hair. Vichitagata sat upright. Bodhidharma faced the wall. Both became one piece, wholehearted and committed. Shishuang was like a gnarled dead tree. Rujing warned against sleepy sitting and said, just sitting is all you need, without need for incense offering, bowing, chanting Buddha's name, repentance, or reading scriptures. When you sit, wear the kashaya, or the okesa, which includes rakasu, is a kind of kashaya. Except in the first and last parts of the night when the daily sitting schedule is not officially in effect. So that's, maybe Keizan is the first to say that's why we don't come into the Zendo in the morning with the rakasu or robe, and we do the robe chant after sitting. That's what he's saying. Don't wear the okesa in the very early morning.
Does the night part mean that sometimes monks come back after the schedule
and yeah.
sit through the night or sit later in the
Yeah, morning? Yeah. It's kind of informal. So you could say that all our morning periods of Zazen are kind of informal Zazen. And officially the day starts with chanting service. Don't neglect this. The round cushion should be about 1 foot across and 3 feet in circumference. It's getting specific. Well, I think the round one, I think it's about 1 foot across, and I think in circumference means the widest part. Even that one is probably 2.5 feet circumference, right? These are, you know, in old Japanese measurements, so they're probably a little bit different. Yeah.
That figures that out.
Yes, yes. But this is like yeah. 2πd. So this is basically instructions for how to make a zafu. But also don't put the zafu under the full thighs, but only from mid-thigh to the base of the spine. These are nice points that aren't in the Fukan Zazengi, but they are in the Zazengi. In other words, don't sit way back here, or your legs will fall asleep. Just keep the cushion, like, you know, just without cutting off the circulation. This is how the Buddhas and ancestors sat. You can sit in the full or half lotus position. To sit in full lotus, you put your right foot on your left thigh and your left foot on your right thigh. Loosen your robes, keep them in order. Put your right hand on your left leg, on your left palm facing upward, on your right palm, thumb tips touching. Keep them close to the body at the level of the navel. Your thumbs are at the level, at the elevation of the navel. Sit upright without leaning to the left or right, front or back. Ears and shoulders, nose and navel are aligned. Place the tongue on the front roof of your mouth and breathe gently through your nose. The mouth should be closed. The eyes should be open, but not too wide or too slight. It's a little detail. It's not in the Fukan Zazengi. Harmonizing the body in this way, breathe deeply with the mouth open once or twice. Sitting steadily. This is also not in the Fukan Zazengi. He just says there, rock your body right and left. Here, Dogen, and I think, and also Keizan says, sway the torso 7 or 8 times in decreasing movements. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I actually don't do that many times, but I do like to rock the body right and left. And now we say, think of not thinking. And there's many different translations of this. I'll just share this one. It's quite nice, I think. Now think of what is without thought. How can you think of it? Be before thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen. Be before thinking. Now think of what is without thought. How can you think of it? Be before thinking, or beyond thinking, non-thinking. This is the essential method or art of Zazen. Shatter obstacles and become intimate with awakening awareness. This one says, as maybe more literal is, break through kleshas, afflictions, and intimately verify bodhi, awakening. When you want to get up from samadhi, put your hands on your knees. Some translations interpret this as palms up. And I think they do that more like the really ritualized way in Japan, like this. But it seems a little, I don't know the function of it, so I don't do it. And sway 7 or 8 times in increasing movements. So the opposite is there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And get up. Actually, moves slowly and quietly, calmly and deliberately. Actually, here it says, after you sway in such a way, breathe out through the mouth, put your hands on the floor or the platform, and get up lightly from the seat. Slowly walk, circling to the right or left, or really walk clockwise. Turn, I think one way to translate it is, turn when you get up from your seat, you turn clockwise when you're fluffing your cushion back up. And then you turn clockwise to walk too. Because clockwise is Buddha-wise. We know from circumambulating stupas and images, and today we'll circumambulate the Buddha clockwise. And then, so that's... sun-wise, they sometimes say. Because in the northern hemisphere, the sun always moves that, moves clockwise, right?
And it's also the Coriolis effect when you flush the toilet.
Yeah, so they... But in those days, they didn't have toilets.
That's right.
But they did have the sun. And then there's a whole long section that we already went over that's the details about working with dullness and sleepiness and working with distraction and agitation that we covered on a previous day. And then we come to the end, where the end is kind of like, after all these zazen instructions, you could say this last paragraph is like, is now getting up from zazen and going about your life. It's kind of like leaving the cushion practice, although it doesn't get so specific. There's other instructions for how to use the toilet, wash your face and cook a meal and stuff. But here, arising from samadhi and stillness, carry out dignified conduct without thinking. Actualization is the fundamental point. Genjo soku koan. So, you say, Genjo koan is actualizing the fundamental point. So, actualization is the fundamental point. When, as you get it from zazen. So he's riffing on Genjo koan here.
Actualizing in
translators' practice? Genjo, actualizing, is like manifesting. Or, and you could say that's the act, yeah, in a way, practice, the side of being and manifesting, making real. And the fundamental point is the inconceivable ocean of here and now. You could say that's the koan. The fundamental point is before the first signs appear, this ocean of here and now is where we live, but we have to actualize the ocean by like stirring it and making a wave called. This wave is getting up off the cushion and coming down the mountain and meeting the beings of this world with a loving heart. So actualization, it here, is the koan. It's like, soku is that word in the Heart Sutra where we say, form itself is emptiness. Sokuze ku ku sokuze. Form itself is emptiness. Emptiness is form. So it's kind of like actualization itself is the fundamental point. Genjo itself is the koan. So actualization is the fundamental point. When practice and realization are without interacting, then the fundamental point is actualization. So this is the kind of thing, like in Japanese, he's pulling out all these dogen phrases, like Genjo Koan, practice and realization is this shusho, and without interacting is from the Sandokai, always say, each sense in every field interact and do not interact. So we could say, the senses and the objects, they seem to interact, but actually they don't interact. They never really meet because they're not really separate. And then, so Dogen picked up on that not interacting. He put that into his acupuncture needle of Zazen poem, where he has a line, Zazen, it is completed without interacting. And I think it's particular that he's pulling a phrase from the merging of difference and unity. But all this is like how you can see how it's these Zen ancestors just have so much fun playing with the previous ancestors, and a lot of it probably just goes right past people. But these particular lines are very beautiful. So again, here's the whole part is actualization itself is the fundamental point. When practice and realization are without interaction, because they're not separate, then the fundamental point is the actualization. Yeah. Yeah, and it's all a very poetic way of talking about non-duality.
Yeah.
And non-duality of practice and realization, non-duality of actualization and the fundamental point. And non-duality of each sense in every field. That which is before any sign arises, the scenery on the other side of the empty eon, the spiritual functional essence of all Buddhas and all ancestors is just this one thing, or this one matter. And this is again a little line from Dogen's and Hungjer's Zazen Shin acupuncture needle poem says, I think they both begin with the same line, each Buddha and, or the functional essence of all Buddhas and the essential function, essential function of all Buddhas and the functional essence of all ancestors. I think that maybe both poems begin that way. And so here he's the function and essence is again this pair that are not separate. So here it's the scenery on the other side of the empty eon is the spiritual functional essence of all Buddhas and all ancestors. And it's just this one thing. And then he ends the whole Zazen Yodin Ki essay with a quote from a Chinese ancestor, Shishuan, who's, it's interesting that he kind of caps it off with this saying. Shishuan was a disciple of Yaoshan. Yakusan Igen is in our lineage, but Shishuan is not, you know, he's like a lineage cousin to us, right? So he's close to our Soto lineage. And but he was really into like the stillness of Zazen, and he's known for having what he called the Dead Tree Hall. The Dead Tree Hall was the name for his Zendo, because everybody just sat like dead trees. Like he said earlier, like this, like a gnarled old tree, just like I recently saw a picture of that. I think it's the oldest tree in the world, is this bristlecone pine in Death Valley or something. Uh-huh, eastern slope of Sierras. Yeah, I think the oldest tree in the world. I think maybe 3,000 years? About 3,000 years old. So that tree grew before Buddhas awakening that was 2,500 years ago. It was, that tree was growing. So, and it looks, yeah, exactly, it looks, it doesn't have any leaves or anything. And it's very gnarled, and it's out in the wind, and it's all twisted, and it's not so big. So, 3,000 years without moving. So this Sichuan had the dead tree hall. And they, partly I think they called it that because in that assembly there was the practice of people didn't lie down to sleep. They just sat, always, they slept sitting in zazen. And there are people who still do this.
Yes, I was going to say. Even today.
That's, and there's, and as an intentional practice, like City of 10,000 Buddhas, not everybody, but many in that assembly, just literally never lie down for years and years. They sleep with their robes on, sitting up, but they do lean against the wall. And so this is the ancestor that Keizan's kind of like celebrating at the end. And this direct quote of his ancestor must have been known because it also appears in case 96 of the Book of Serenity. Some students of Sichuan, after he's died, they're quoting their teacher, Sichuan. And I won't say the whole case, but here's the quote. "You should just rest and cease. Be cool. Pass 10,000 years as one moment, one thought. Be cold ashes, a withered tree, an incense burner in an abandoned temple, a piece of pure white silk that's ready for calligraphy but has nothing on it. Ready to receive anything, but just white." This is my earnest wish. This is my earnest wish. Keizan says. This? It's Keizan. It's all Keizan's Zazen Yodinki.
Is it published like that in two sheets?
Yeah, four page. You can fit it on four pages in English.
Is it
available? Yes. Mm-hmm. It can get your copy later.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. After Sashin. Sure. Or digitally, too. And there's... At first I said there were maybe only... two translations, but when I started poking around, it seems like there's five or six people have translated, because this is an important Soto Zen Zazen instruction manual. So, but, you know, not so known compared to, like, the Fukan Zazengi, but now it is known in the Warm Jewel Assembly. And some, I think, beautiful pieces. A lot of nuts and bolts details and a lot of just expression of non-duality in classic Zen style.
I was just wondering if it was in the Platform Sutra for some reason.
No. Keizan, and as I mentioned, maybe the most unusual thing is he excerpts an entire fascicle of Dogen, is like a quarter of the whole essay of Keizan. There's translations by Thomas Cleary, Stephen Hine, the translator. This one was Yasuda Joshu and Anzan Hoshin Roshis, and Shasta Abbey did a translation.
So, according to him, you place your left foot on your right thigh. And then your right foot on your left thigh.
Well, according to Dogen and Keizan, they both say it as the left foot ends up on top. So you start with your in full lotus, you like that. You first place your right foot and then the left.
All the Buddhists in Garden, for instance, they all.
They do it the other way. Yes, it's true. It's true. And they say in half lotus, those manuals say left on top. And you're right, it's opposite from the Buddha statues and paintings. And so one story about that is that the left side of the body is like the yin side, the receptive side, and the right side is the yang, active side. And even modern brain science would, let's see. Actually, the brain is opposite the body, right?
That's right.
So the right side of the brain is the receptive side, roughly speaking, and the left is active. But the left side is connected to the right side of the body, as I understand it, right? The brain crosses over. So then they knew about some of this stuff, I think, in the old days. And channels where we have, you know, there's the ancient yogas, like the male and female channels and so on. So, because of this, this one story I've heard is that when we as bodhisattvas on the path are practicing, we put a receptivity, passive receptivity on top as the dominant mode. And also with our hands, put the Dogen says, put your left on your right. And Buddhas are not just receptively, passively receiving, they're actively teaching. So they reverse and put the active side on top. It's a nice story. That's a kind of esoteric and yogic. But that's right. And Rujing tells Dogen, I think he maybe says that this left on top, but then he says, but if your legs get tired, you can switch them. This is the teaching of all Buddhas and ancestors. Yeah, so, and the way my teacher, Tenchin Roshi, presented, if you sit cross-legged, that you don't need to always sit the same way. In fact, you can alternate every period, which is, because I heard that early on, I started practicing that way, and I still do that in Sesshin. Every period I alternate. Right and left, usually a full lotus, although for Dharma talks, I relax. And then whatever leg is on top, this is the way Tenchin Roshi taught it. Just, I don't know if he made this up, but he puts that hand on top. So also every period of Zazen, I switch my mudra. So, and it's just, it's nice, it's flexible that way, right? We get used to both ways. And they still feel to me slightly different. Maybe a slight preference for the left on top. As you went on sitting in half lotus, because I pretty much always put the left foot on top. Because actually it really works better for me. But I think it's nice to mix it up. And sometimes I even think of first period in the morning. When I need a little more energy, I put the active side on top. And now once I've woken up, then I switch to the left. But I actually do it that way. But this is like, now this is kind of Kokyo's esoteric interpretations. Rinzai Zen, maybe there's some different hand mudras, right? And shashus can also be. I've heard Rinzai shashu is left over right. Soto shashu is like this. And sometimes we turn it down a little bit. So, So the right is the active is enclosing the receptive in Soto Zen. And in Rinzai Zen, the receptive is enclosing the active. This is shop talk. But
but for Yaza, if you're staying up all night, this is so much easier.
Yeah.
You just relax your shoulders, close your eyes, and try to go to sleep.
May we all be... Yeah, these kind of like, this very still, unmoving. And so since you brought it up then, I can't resist the koan in the Book of Serenity, this case 96. So something, as I recall, something like these two students of Shi Shuang, who said that, are living in this temple, and the head monk is lined up to be the next abbot, and but another student in the assembly says, I'm not sure that you completely understood our late teacher's dharma, actually. So before you secede to the abbotship, we should check this out. And he said, so this uppity, kind of like a rabble rouser said, as you know, our lay teacher said, you should just rest and cease. Be cool. Past 10,000 years is one thought. Be cold ashes, a withered tree, an incense burner, and an abandoned temple, a piece of pure white silk. Which side does this illustrate? He asks the head monk. And the head monk says, it illustrates the side of uniformity and one color, like pure white. And this challenging other monk says, just as I thought, you didn't understand our late teacher's meaning. And the head monk says, you think so? Just to prove it to you, set up some incense over there. And so he lights some incense and he says, okay, now, put that incense stick there. But watch now. Before that incense stick burns to the bottom, I will be able to cease completely and die. And so they watch the incense burning, and before it burned to the bottom, that monk died sitting.
That's sincere.
That's just to prove a point, right? And the other monk patted his corpse on the back and said, you do have the power to die while either sitting or standing, but you haven't even dreamed of our late teacher's meaning.
Oh. You got the last words.
And so, it's a whole koan, but it's interesting. I'm sure Keizan knew about that koan. And so it's the interpretation is this total stillness of the incense burner and the abandoned shrine and this cold ashes, this total cessation imagery is not just a matter of dying and like total cessation, it's you might be able to die completely, but can you actually receive an entire world of calligraphy on this pure white silk and express 10,000 things and let plum blossoms like rain all over this dusty incenser and let these 10,000 years in one thought dance and sing. Thus, we arise from the sitting slowly, quietly, and deliberately, and dance and sing in this world of suffering beings as a piece of pure white silk and an abandoned incenser in death and in life, in silence and in shout.
In the Zendo, you have the flame windows, looks like a bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To burn out.
Burn out.
Not the same thing as burning out America, but burning out, basically.
Burn out everything with fierce, bright flames.
But all you have to do is burn out yourself. The rest is easy.
The rest is easy from there. So, friends, let us conclude the Dharma assembly of the Zazen Yojinki and dedicate the merit of our study of Keizan Zazen instructions to the Zazen of all beings everywhere and everyone who aspires to practice the Zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors, and to those who never even dreamed of Zazen, may they all dream of it and open to it and enter the ocean of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.